The initial shock of Sunday's night's mass shooting in Las Vegas may have worn a bit thinner, but the sadness lingers. And as stories of survival and investigation continue, another focus shifts to the question of gun control. While this may or may not be an issue the U.S. Congress deals with beyond those so-called bump stocks, it is something that state legislatures address, including here in Hawaii. Hannah Shearer is staff attorney and Second Amendment litigation director at the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. She joined us earlier for a conversation from San Francisco. Hannah, thanks for joining us this morning. You know, the discussion over gun control is often framed on a national level, but your group sees the state and local level as essential to this. Tell us more about that perspective.
You're right that we do see it as essential because actually, while federal progress has stalled in recent years, a number of states have stepped up to pass stronger gun laws, particularly in the wake of the terrible shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012. So we've seen a lot of progress on the state level, and we've also noticed a correlation that states with stronger gun laws experience lower gun death rates per capita. So it's an indication to us that our gun policies that we support are working on the state level.
That discussion about who gets legislative priority, the federal versus state, I mean, this has been a discussion that's been going on since Hamilton and Jefferson. How for gun control, how is that playing out?
Well, I think there are many advantages to having federal gun policy because one state's gun laws are only as strong as the neighboring states, which of course, you know, in Hawaii is a different story, but you know, in places like Chicago, Illinois has relatively strong gun laws, but the neighboring states have weaker laws, and so there's lots of guns coming in from other states. So it's important to support federal policies, but unfortunately, Congress has really abdicated its responsibility in many ways, including after Sandy Hook, when many people thought that finally progress would be made with background checks, and nothing happened. It's a tricky political environment right now federally, and there are things that states can do even if Congress doesn't act. And we've seen that in states like Hawaii, as well as in California, other western states as well.
And you do that state analysis on gun laws, and Hawaii scores pretty well on that. You give an overall grade of B+, and you point out also that Hawaii is the lowest of all the states in terms of gun deaths. What is it that has helped Hawaii on the positive side of gun legislation and regulation?
We certainly think Hawaii's laws are fairly strong. Hawaii has a good background check system in place and also has a more recent law known as the wrap back system that tries to make sure that people who buy a gun and then become prohibited from owning it are identified by law enforcement. Hawaii also restricts assault weapons and large capacity magazines, and has child access prevention law, and also prohibits the sale of unsafe handguns. I'll also point out that Hawaii has not only low rates of gun death, but also low gun suicide rates, which is another important indicator that we look for in terms of states that have made progress in reducing gun deaths.
One area where you say that Hawaii could do better is to enact legislation that would require the removal of firearms when a temporary restraining order is issued relating to domestic violence. Why is that so critical and such a key piece to this overall puzzle of gun violence in America?
Well, a lot of gun violence in America is, unfortunately, domestic gun violence. You know, abusers that have firearms are much more likely to injure or kill their intimate partners than if they don't have firearms. And there's often a very critical period after a victim of domestic abuse seeks help, you know, gets a restraining order. That can trigger a very dangerous period where the abuser wants to retaliate. We always recommend that states focus on that period of time and protecting women when they're potentially most vulnerable. And so a key element of that is the temporary restraining order.
Are there particular states that you see as models on this domestic violence situation, the TROs relating to gun violence?
I'd point point to California. California has good laws around domestic violence and firearms generally, but one recent change that strengthened the law was to set out specific relinquishment procedures to make sure that when a person is ordered by a court to give up firearms in connection with a domestic violence restraining order, there's an enforceable and orderly process for the court to make sure that the firearms are turned in. And that's a missing piece in many states' laws. A lot of states kind of have a system that's like the honor system, like somebody who becomes prohibited is just told to turn in their guns, but there isn't an enforcement process. And so that is, I think, a critical distinction in why California's law is stronger.
You mentioned suicides, you mentioned domestic violence. A piece in the Washington Post citing work done by the data journalism site 538 goes through 33,000 lives ended each year by gun violence in America. Two-thirds of those are suicides. Next largest set of gun deaths, young men between 15 and 34, mostly dying at the hands of other young men. And the third highest is related to domestic violence, 1,700 women murdered each year. When you look at those three big pieces of gun violence, do you see positive movement on any of them, on a combination of them, or where's your sense of where we are nationally?
Sure, and I think that those three are all critical areas where we've seen some progress in some states, but maybe not in every state. The domestic violence piece is interesting because it cuts across party lines. We've seen states that are controlled by Republicans, like Louisiana, that have high gun death rates, high gun ownership rates, still take steps to protect domestic abuse victims from gun violence. So that's one issue that I think can get bipartisan support and can be enacted even in states that have very weak laws overall. To address suicide and interpersonal conflicts between young men, I think sometimes those pieces are overlooked a little bit. And my organization recently did an extensive research project on gun suicides, and our goal was to combat the inevitability myth, the idea that suicides are going to happen no matter what the laws are, no matter what the gun laws are. And in reality, gun laws can make a huge difference in gun suicides, just because if somebody who's suicidal doesn't have immediate access to a gun, the impulse might pass away and they might be able to get help for their mental health problems. So suicide is what we call means specific, and by tightening gun laws around people who are mentally ill, who are suicidal, lives can be saved.
You know, Hannah, when a mass shooting occurs, an event like Las Vegas, there's always the spike in attention to gun control, but it seems that it does not linger. How, from your position, do you maintain a focus on that legislative groundwork that's required for any changes in the laws, and be that nationally or state by state or locally?
My organization tries to keep pushing our legislators to do the right thing on the one hand, but then also to listen to voters, because what becomes so clear in the aftermath of a terrible tragedy like this is that most people want to improve our gun policies. Most people think this is unacceptable, like something has to be done. And it's really groups on the fringe, groups like the NRA that aren't necessarily even representing the views of their members, but are representing the views of an extreme minority of their membership, that are standing in the way. And so part of it is just reminding our representatives that most Americans, the overwhelming majority, over 90%, support common sense measures like background checks, support restricting access to incredibly dangerous, accessories that turn an assault weapon into a machine gun, things like that. And so I think it's important to just remember that this is common ground, so progress is possible.
Hannah Shearer is staff attorney and Second Amendment litigation director at the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. Hannah, thanks for joining us this morning.
You're welcome.